It's good to see you. Welcome. This is Heart of Freedom. I'm Doug Pullen, and it's a pleasure to have this opportunity to practice with you this evening. So it's Thursday, March 14th. Those of us who are in Portland had the wonderful opportunity to have a beautiful spring day, sunny day after lots of rain and cold weather. So that's pleasant for a lot of us. And so I'm glad you could show up here this evening. And we'll just be getting started in just a minute. So make yourself comfortable. And we've got this opportunity to support each other in practice. And so as we get settled in, just to start with checking in and see if there's anything that you need to be comfortable for sitting this evening. We're going to do about a 35-minute meditation with a little bit of guiding and support along the way, but there'll be some periods of silence. And Then there'll be an opportunity for doing some check-in, and I'll share a Dharma talk. So the Dharma reflection this evening is going to be on the reflection of knowing and not knowing. So have a chance to kind of explore what that's about. Yeah. And So as you're getting settled, might be helpful in the beginning just to check in, letting your eyes close and just bringing the focus more inside and making a conscious intention to let go of preoccupations with the past and the future. This isn't a period of time to try to analytically figure things out. This is more to come back home to our true nature, which is right here. It's in this moment. An invitation to be curious about what it is that we discover when we deepen into the experience of this miracle of being alive, really. The experience of pressure, warmth, coolness, tingling. Might be helpful to just have a sense of groundedness through feeling our connection with the sitting, like the cushion or the chair or the feet resting on the floor, or maybe it's hands and fingers touching. This invitation to practice is a welcoming invitation. What does that mean? It means that the aspiration is to welcome ourselves and all beings into the experience of presence, and to the experience of our true nature, which is only found right here, this moment. and we can notice that there could be some accumulation of tension or resistance or contraction. Sometimes our bodies are repositories of unconscious conditioning that starts to show up when we pay attention. And if that's the case, it might manifest as tension or constriction. And it isn't that we've done anything wrong. This isn't a cause for judgment. It's an invitation for compassion and seeing if we can bring a tender, kind presence. Like, for example, just to check in with the face, the area around the eyes and the forehead might be a place where we hold tension, constriction, neck and shoulders. Yeah, perhaps the chest or belly. So just to take this opportunity as a practice of self-compassion to check in mindfully and see if there's any softening that can happen, and not trying to force anything. It's more just through the awareness and the intention of kindness that we offer this opportunity to let things soften and just coming softly into the present moment. And to take advantage of the experience of breathing, that it's a conscious opportunity to deepen the breath, maybe take the breath deeper and longer and slower for two or three breaths, if that seems helpful, just to help there be a little bit of ease and softening. And then to give ourselves over to the breath, to just let the breath become the central focus without trying to change it. So just letting the breath breathe itself, just letting the breath manifest its natural expression and staying curious about that. Staying connected with awareness to the sensations that let us know that we're breathing. And each breath can be a direct experiential reminder that it's possible to take refuge in awareness. It's possible to take refuge in the direct experience of the truth that's beyond concepts and ideas, that's right here. That it's possible to take refuge in love, in the understanding of our inexorably intertwined nature, that we're part of community, that we support each other in this practice and in our awakening. So taking refuge in awareness, truth, love, taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, with this breath, with this embodied experience of a chest that expands, that rises to fullness, and then releases all by itself. Or a belly that rises and falls. Or perhaps the sensation of the touch of the breath at the tip of the nostrils. So this is just an invitation to actually remember what we already know. It's deep in our bones, this inherent capacity to be awake, to be fully present. It's not something that we have to create. It's more a returning to or an uncovering through not becoming attached to or identified with the thoughts that pass through. Of course there'll be thoughts that pass through, and of course at times we'll get carried away and lost in thinking, and then there's waking up to that with kindness. And of course, that's what's happening. And then there's this wonderful invitation of a body sitting and breathing that's always here. It's always beckoning us back to remember, not intellectually remembering, but experientially knowing, oh, this is home. And it's the home that we actually never really left. We just forgot that we were already there. if there is a sense of ease in staying with the ever-changing flow of in-breathing and out-breathing, or some other more predominant experience or sensation in the present moment, it's wonderful. See if it's possible, really, to just let go into or let be whatever is happening in this moment. Being present and recognizing how we don't really know what the next moment is going to bring. We don't know how the breath is going to manifest or what sensations are going to rise. And seeing if we can just be totally okay with being in this ever-changing flow, this dream of consciousness. And if there's any challenges with staying with the breath or a predominant present moment focal point, you could experiment with taking a hand and putting it on your belly or chest, and that could just naturally make it easier to notice the breath without having to think about it. And sometimes there's other challenges that make it difficult to accept the ever-changing flow of experience. And if there is an experience of unpleasantness or discomfort or aversion, it could be helpful to remember that that could be a mindfulness object, that we can notice the pain in the left knee or the experience of sadness as something that's just happening here in the present moment, and just allow it to be felt, to notice it without having to try to push it away. Sometimes there's things that we're clinging to or wanting more of, the pleasant sensation that came on the lower back, there was a relaxation that was pleasant, and then it disappears, and there's a wanting or a clinging, and just allowing it to go, just letting it be. So anything that arises is part of meditation. It's part of what we get to be curious about, sit with the breath right here at the center. So present moment, reference point, touchstone. So if you're finding it easy to be present with the breath or a most predominant object like contact or a sound, see if it's possible to just let go into the flow of change. We don't know what the next moment is going to bring. and letting go into that uncertainty, just allowing it to be like this. Letting go of clinging or resisting as much as possible. And if the breath is subtle or elusive and it's difficult to find a place to come to rest in the present moment, you can try putting a hand on your belly or chest and see, does that help? Does that help to stabilize awareness, give enough kind of feedback to your nervous system that it's a little easier? Sometimes with meditation, there's ideas based on something that we've heard or read or been told about what should be happening, what a good, quote, meditation is. And if there's any thoughts like that floating around, yeah, just noticing that as thinking, as an object to be aware of in the present moment, a commentary or a judgment. In this practice, what we know is only what we directly experience, no more, no less. And so that's the invitation. to take refuge in that direct experience of truth. If we let go of everything we've read, everything that we've heard, everything that we've been told, then we're left with nothing but our direct experience. And even this is constantly changing as each moment and each experience gives way to the next. So the only certainty there is this moment, this experience, this breath. Welcome once again, and please be invited to continue to consciously intend towards presence. We won't be doing a formal meditation here in these next few minutes, but there's an opportunity to take that intention of mindful presence into movement. Stretching, we're listening. So it's a wonderful opportunity to take these transition points as a place to keep the practice going. And when we finish this evening and you transition back into the rest of your life this evening, that can be another opportunity to keep the thread going, to notice walking or sitting, or as you pull the blankets down from the covers in the bed to lie down and go to sleep, to take that as a mindfulness opportunity to be present. So I'd like to share a few brief announcements. First, just as usual, I posted in the chat a link to our virtual Dana Bowl, which is the practice of generosity. These teachings are offered freely, and so your support is can come from a genuine place of the joy of giving, really, the giving to something that's useful or helpful. So just an invitation to consider. And also thanks, Ismay, for giving me the heads up about the mute button getting hit inadvertently, so appreciate that. Wanted to mention a couple of upcoming practice opportunities. So coming up on the 4th of April, I'm going to be offering a 6-session series called The Basics of Mindfulness, the spring version. So it'll be a little different, but basically the same material. And yeah, so just an opportunity for those who might be new to practice to kind of get into the groove and understand. And if you want to refresh your practice with the basics, you're welcome to come back. Coming up on the 25th of March, Candle Summers and Phyllis Moses are offering the Spring Equinox Meditation Movement and Sound Healing. And that's a day-long retreat at PIMC from 10 to 4. And let's see, anything else? Oh, I'm going to be teaching on Sunday, this coming Sunday, from 10 to noon at PIMC. So be wonderful to see you folks there. So I think that's the most upcoming things that I wanted to share with you. So now it's a chance for us to check in as a community this evening, a chance to hear what's most alive for each of you, and it's totally optional. Don't have to say a word if you don't want to. But if you'd like to share, it would be lovely to hear your name and a few words about, what's up for you in your practice this evening. And then when you're finished, just say, I've spoken. Let's the next person know that they could take a turn. If you would like to also really make a kind of a clear, safe space for the sharing, we can refrain from engaging in crosstalk, so we really give that space to each person. So I'll start. My name is Doug, and I just want to share a gratitude and appreciation for Paul Levine, who took the teacher seat for me last week. I'm so grateful and happy that whoever of you showed up last week had a chance to experience Paul. He's one of our teacher trainees here at PIMC. So thanks, Paul. I have spoken.
I am a dewdrop slowly formed on a spring leaf. As it falls and hits the ground, it makes the sound clay. Right now I'm feeling, in during the meditation, the idea of us coming from love and being of one love. Love is, I have a new love in my life, which I'm very excited and happy about. At one point in my life, I questioned whether I would ever have that again in my life. I don't believe that any of us, this might sound harsh, I don't believe that any of us deserve love. It's a gift. It's something that can't be expected. And I just feel really right now just full of love and full of not just gratitude for the love I've received, but for that love exists at all, for us as humans. May all beings, all sentient beings, benefit from the merits of our practice. I've spoken.
Hi, this is Claire. I put this cat down. Doug, I wanted to say I didn't notice the mute. I was deep into something, so I thought that was wonderful, that silence. But there was a statement that you made, if we let go of anything we've been taught or heard or read. I've heard that before, and I just wanted to point out the beauty of hearing things again and having it settle and land completely differently. And that struck me as a big wow, because if all of that is let go, then there is no other option except the present moment. So that was very powerful for me this time after hearing it probably for decades, honestly. So thank you. I'm finished. I'm Laura. I've been struggling to maintain any kind of equanimity in the last little while. And I feel kind of, I've been feeling kind of, I don't know, raw, I guess. A bit, and I'm finding that other people's irritation, whether or not it's aimed at me, just being in the same room, or I don't know. I'm just having a hard time staying really present, and yeah. And some equilibrium. So I meditated this morning. I meditated tonight with you. It helped. But I'm trying to figure out how, I mean, there are things I need to do in my own life, but I'm struggling to find out how my practice can help me
with this. I know that I don't actually hate everybody I know. I'm pretty sure anyway. But I have a tendency lately to go off and think I do. So any kind of, I actually know what I need to do is just practice more. But any kind of help you could give me on that would be greatly appreciated. And that is it. Mm-hmm. I have spoken. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So just check and see anybody on the, just on the edge of unmuting, jumping in. Like to respond to your sharing, Laura, and so just to check for understanding, what I'm hearing is that you're going through a time of kind of disequilibrium, that there isn't much equanimity to be found, although it sounds like when you're practicing, things get a little bit better, which happened this evening, but that it's hard to be around other people right now. And the emotional energy you're really sensitive to, and even if it isn't directed towards you, that you find yourself kind of being reactive to that, or feeling reactive to that. Is that close to what your experience is? Well, your wisdom and intuition that practicing more at times like this is helpful, definitely. And one practice that could be helpful, we don't have the kind of time or connection this evening where I could ask a lot of more questions, but a lot of times when this kind of thing is happening, in the mix is self-judgment or ideas that I should be feeling something different. I don't know if that's there for you. And so that might be the place to start, is with some self-compassion and kindness. It's like, yeah, this is what's happening. And it's not something that you're choosing consciously, obviously, because it's unpleasant. It's dukkha for you. So In the moments that it's happening, if you could find some space around the edges there to just be tender with yourself. And this doesn't feel good, and I'm hurting. And see if that helps to let things soften a little bit. And then if you can find some self-compassion, then maybe it's possible to start to feel some of that for the people that you're having a difficult time being around. But it usually, for me, it usually doesn't work to try to do that with others before I do it for myself. I have to find that tender place inside of me first, that capacity. So that's just for starters. Does that make any sense?
It does. It helps. I think I try really hard to kind of push past it when it's happening and to not feel it, and because I'm usually with other people, and that does help.
So that can be, I mean, there's when it's unpleasant like this, there's often resistance and reluctance to accept it and say, oh, this is my practice right now. But if you can get over that hump, then that can be really a really powerful opportunity. How do we experience equanimity? It's by being present with and observing the reactive mind. We come to equanimity by being willing to be here with the lack of equanimity and breathe with it and notice how it feels in the body. And it's tender. It's based on kindness. It isn't based on trying to fix anything. So anyway, hope that's helpful.
It is.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So just coming back from a week off on retreat, wanted to share a Dharma talk that comes from just a recognition, or perhaps it's a deepening understanding about the peace that comes from accepting that on the deepest level, I just don't know. And being okay with not knowing intellectually. That may sound strange, but I've found that to be incredibly comforting. The deepest spiritual truths, this skin encapsulated ego, this conceptual apparatus that has wonderful qualities, can't possibly ever understand. But there's something that does know that it doesn't know. And if that's confusing, please bear with me this evening and see if you can, trust your own sense of both knowing and not knowing. And see if you can make room for both to make it okay. Our culture enshrines and worships at the altar of knowledge, of knowing lots of things, technical knowledge, philosophical knowledge, mathematical knowledge, lots of different kinds of knowledge. And we have an incredibly, materialistically rich culture based on all of that knowledge. But it seems like we're kind of lacking in the wisdom department in terms of how to actually be with each other and the planet. And so all of that abundance of knowledge and knowing things doesn't always serve us very well. And I'm afraid that it's really bringing us to the brink in terms of our survival on the planet. And so it's important to kind of step back from worshiping at that altar. I'm not suggesting that we abandon it. Of course, there's a lot of really incredibly important things there. But I just invite you to see if you can stay open to this possibility that maybe there's also value in not knowing. And I'd like to start with a quote from Pema Chodron, who's a Vajrayana teacher that probably many of you are familiar with. She said, when we think that something is going to bring us pleasure, we don't know what's really going to happen. When we think something is going to give us misery, we don't know. Letting there be room for non-knowing is the most important thing of all. We try to do what we think is going to help, But we don't know. We never know if we're going to fall flat or sit up tall. When there's a big disappointment, we don't know if that's the end of the story. It might be just the beginning of a great adventure. And there's a Taoist story that goes right along with this quote from Pema Chodron. Probably many of you have heard it before, but I think it's worth repeating. So there's an old farmer who'd worked his crops for many years. One day, his horse ran away. Upon hearing the news, his neighbors came to visit, and they said, "Such bad luck," with lots of sympathy, with care and concern. And the old farmer replied, "Maybe." The next morning, the horse returned, bringing with it three other wild horses. "How wonderful," the neighbors exclaimed. And the old man replied, "Maybe." The following day, his son tried to ride one of the untamed horses and was thrown and broke his leg. The neighbor again came to offer his sympathy for what he called misfortune. "Maybe," answered the farmer. The day after, military officials came to the village to draft a young man into the army. Seeing that the son's leg was broken, they passed him by. The neighbors congratulated the farmer on how well things had turned out. "Maybe. We'll see," said the farmer. So we don't really know. Life happens, it unfolds, and there's too many variables for us to possibly know for sure how things are going to go. And so I submit to you for your consideration this evening, and contrary to popular opinion, that we as human beings don't really know that much. And some people bristle when they hear that. And it might even bring up some righteous indignation. But when we look deeper, when we look at our own minds and bodies, it gets pretty hard to deny that there's a lot of things we really don't know for sure. We have lots of ideas. We have a lot of conceptual overlays that help us feel safer, because it seems to be safer. It appears to be safer to think that we know what's going to happen. To actually face the truth that we don't really know takes courage and takes a different kind of relationship with our experience. And it seems to me that's part of what Dharma practice invites us into. So in a world where everything's constantly changing, and to my subjective experience, maybe this is just growing older, but it seems like the pace of change is just getting faster. Does anybody else have that sense? People, places, politics, situations, even our own minds are in a constant state of flux. A lot of times people give up this form of meditation because it's a little disturbing to see how much flux there is, how much change there is. Just notice the states of consciousness, the mood states during any given day, how they change. The illusion of certainty certainly has an appeal, and there's whole organizations and religions that are based on believing in something that's certain, that gives a kind of reassurance. And I'm not knocking that. I totally understand where people are coming from in wanting that, reducing the anxiety. So what I'm suggesting to you this evening is that it's important in our spiritual practice to differentiate between what we know and what we believe, what we know and what we suspect, what we know and what we've been told. And what we know from the point of view of the Dharma is what we actually experience. No more, no less. And this is going back to my instruction during the meditation. If we let go of everything we've read, heard, been told, then we're left with nothing but our direct experience. I'm not saying don't read spiritual books or listen to Dharma talks or whatever, but let's not mistake that for spiritual awakening. Those are helpful guides. They help with skillful understanding. But to actually get the benefits of this practice, we have to discover for ourselves what's true. That's what it comes down to. That's why the emphasis is on meditation. What I'm suggesting also is, with compassion and kindness, there is no shame in not knowing. There's only freedom. An uncertain mind, a mind that's open, is then free to be curious, interested, reflective. And when we meet life with a genuine sense of, you know, not sure, we cease to project what we think we know and instead begin to see life for what it truly is. That's the basics of mindfulness. I was talking about the basics of mindfulness earlier. One of the fundamental instructions is, step out of your preconceived ideas about what's happening or what's going to happen and actually show up and discover for yourself what is happening, what's really happening, what's really going on. And it isn't a rejection of human intellect. It isn't a disrespect for opinions, our own or others, or belief systems or values. Those are all important things. So it isn't in contradiction. It's not saying don't have those things. It's just saying that there is another way to experience things. The direct experiential understanding of things. And also, just to be clear, what I'm talking about this evening is not about thinking about uncertainty, because that would be no more than doubt and confusion. No, this is the direct experience of uncertainty itself. From moment to moment, free from thought, judgment, opinion, analysis. You could call it naked awareness. And that's one of the places our meditation practice can lead, to really being here in the present moment, to discover for ourselves what's true. There's a kind of analogy on, this isn't in strictly speaking the spiritual realm, but in the physical realm, the realm of aeronautics, there's an analogy in the first years of the 20th century, a renowned physicist and inventor, his name was Samuel Langley, was awarded $70,000. That's $2 million in today's money, to build the first flying machine in the history of humanity. And after many trials, failed attempts, and spending all of that $70,000, he gave up. And the New York Times reported, based on his experience, that the flying machine might be evolved by the combination of continuous efforts of mathematicians and mechanics in 1 million to 10 million years. That was their projection. That's what they thought they knew from that experience. Just a few days later, Wilbur and Orville Wright succeeded to lift the first person-powered flying vehicle off the ground. And their project was self-funded. They were bicycle mechanics, amateur technical solutions. It took the attitude of a beginner to figure out a way for us to fly. And Albert Einstein said, "Everybody knows that some things are simply impossible until somebody who doesn't know that makes them possible." It seems like we have an intractable, impossible environmental catastrophe on our hands. But maybe that's not true. Maybe there's some transformative thing that can happen. There might be somebody alive or a group of people alive on the planet today that have an incredible solution. We don't know. It's possible. So this openness, stepping out of what we are conditioned to believe, is an important part of this practice. And to just take a more kind of balanced view here. Now, I'm kind of climbing out on the not knowing limb of Dharma this evening, but just to put it in context, Buddhist practice involves an interplay between knowing and not knowing. So it includes both. In traditional Vipassana or Theravada Buddhist practice, which is kind of the root practice that we do here at POMC, the practice of insight meditation, the emphasis is on discovering from direct experience that everything is unstable, that's subject to change, that is unsatisfactory to the degree that we want to cling to the pleasant, get rid of the unpleasant, and ignore the neutral. And that there isn't a solid, enduring self here that's observing all of this. That what we most often refer to as ourselves is actually an aggregated process of changing perceptions, body experiences, thoughts, consciousness, and feelings. So Vipassana and Theravada Buddhist practices have incredible lists. Just to name a few, the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, the Four Divine Abodes, the Four Domains of Mindfulness, the Five Hindrances, the Five Aggregates, and so on. And this categorizing and mindful naming is incredibly helpful. It's an incredible map of consciousness. It's an exquisite roadmap. And this realm of knowing has been, it's been the foundation for me of my practice. So I am not meaning at all to diss that in any way, shape, or form this evening. I'm just suggesting to you that there is something beyond naming. There's something beyond knowing. And to the degree that that's true and helpful, just as our capacity to know can be developed and cultivated, so can our practice of not knowing. In the Zen tradition, they talk about beginner's mind. It refers to having an attitude of openness, of eagerness, of lack of preconceptions when engaging in our activities, just like a beginner would. And so with the practice of mindfulness, which is kind of the universal Buddhist practice, we're invited to enter into the mystery, to discover what's true from our own direct experience in the present moment, and to be free from the thicket of views that the Buddha talked about. That's an impediment to awakening. The Zen master Suzuki Roshi said, but lest we take the practice of not knowing too far, not knowing doesn't mean that you don't know. I know that may sound confusing. It doesn't require us to forget everything that we know or to suspend all interpretations of a situation. Not knowing means not being limited by what we know. Holding what we know lightly so that we are ready for it to be different. Maybe things are this way, maybe they're not. I have a good friend who's a longtime Zen practitioner, and she often says, when I make an observation with a little bit too much certainty, not always so. Just staying open, yeah. So, in my experience, just coming off of retreat, there's a lot of joy and peace and real relaxation in accepting that the intellectual mind doesn't know much. Right? It's got a lot of facts and ideas and opinions. But there's so much more that can be experienced in life that's about, what's happening here. It's dropping our expectations and preconceived ideas about something. It's like cleaning a glass. It's like cleaning the windshield. And seeing things more directly, more clearly. So that's an invitation. And I'd like to just give an example. If you could take this to a daily life activity, we could take eating breakfast, for example. You start by seeing the activity of eating with fresh eyes, as if you don't know what to expect, as if you hadn't done it thousands of times already. You really look at the food, the bowl, the spoon, and try to see the details that you might not normally notice. You truly notice the textures, the tastes, the smells. Pay close attention. Don't take anything for granted and appreciate every bite as a gift. It's temporary, it's fleeting, it's precious. I did some of that practice on retreat, taking meals, being fully present for each bite. Changes the whole experience to notice what comes up, the kind of compulsivity, the kind of leaning into what's next, and then just coming back to, this bite, this chew, this taste, this moment. And it's wonderful to be, and my teacher Ruth Dennison said, if you aren't eating mindfully, you're mostly not eating food, you're eating thoughts. And so we actually nourish ourselves more spiritually. And I think it changes our everything, digestion. I slow down, I tend to eat less. I'm more attuned to what's happening in my body. And that's just eating. So what does it do? Well, in my experience, if I'm not clouded by prejudgments and preconceptions and fantasies about what should be or assumptions about what's supposed to be happening, then I'm less disappointed or frustrated. I'm not leaning into the next moment. And it actually improves my relationships. So if I'm talking to someone, instead of being frustrated by them because they aren't doing what I want them to do or they're talking too much or whatever, I can see them with fresh eyes and notice that they're just doing the best they can out of their operating conditioning to try to get their needs met. And they may not be doing it the way I'd like them to do it, but I can appreciate this incredible, unique manifestation of the universe that's doing it this way, instead of being wed to my preconceived ideas. There's less procrastination. If I'm procrastinating on a big, like, work task, I can look at it with beginner's mind, and instead of worrying about how hard the task is going to be and how I might fail at it, I can just be curious about what the task will be like. I don't really know what it's going to be like. I haven't done it before. So it's an adventure. I can see. It's like a discovery. There's less anxiety. I used to get a lot pretty anxious about doing public speaking, teaching, that kind of stuff. It doesn't really happen that much anymore, because I could just open myself up and be curious about what's happening. Most anxiety is creating an image of an imagined future, and then usually it's tilted in a negative direction, and then having anxious feelings about it. So when that's deconstructed in the present moment, the anxiety kind of goes away. It's like, oh, that's just a phantom. That's not what's really happening. There's just this moment. These thoughts passing through is what's happening. Let's see. We don't have much time. I'm sorry I didn't leave enough time. But I'd like to do a little, just a very short little meditation before we close, do our closing. Just to kind of bring this back into direct experience. So, don't need to do anything special, but just sitting in a way that's comfortable and paying attention to your body and your breath. Just coming back to the practice we were doing earlier, but with even more simplicity. And just trying to be present here with what's really happening, clearly, freshly. And when you notice any preconceived ideas, any wandering from the present moment, thinking that you know how it'll be, just notice that. Just noticing, oh, there's those thoughts, there's that commentary. And just coming back to this breath, this moment. This isn't about trying to figure anything out. It's really okay to be here in the mystery. So it's letting those things go. They go by themselves, actually. If we don't get caught up in them, they just naturally arise and pass away. And we can see what our breath is actually like. What is this moment? What is actually happening here? Beyond our concepts and ideas about it, what do we really know? And sometimes it's helpful to, if the mind gets preoccupied with thinking and we're trying to kind of just enter this beginner's mind or this space of non-knowing, to just gently repeat, I don't really know. It's okay not to know. I'm just allowing not knowing. And it can become like a mantra. Yeah, to know that we don't know on a deep level is profound wisdom. Because ultimately, the state of knowing and not knowing are not two, they're not separate. They're non-dual. There is both knowing and not knowing. And if that doesn't make any sense, don't worry about it. Yeah. So, in just a moment, I'm going to bring this short meditation to a close and just invite you to be here with whatever's happening with an attitude of love and kindness, that there isn't any supposed to's, have to's, ought to's. There's just what is. What is happening? There's just a minute or two for a little bit of sharing or check-in. Anybody want to share something before we close? Yeah, Kathy?
Thank you, Gav. Your Dharma talks often to stimulate so much in me, and so I had a lot of reactions. But I think I just want to share a little bit, which is I've long been so aware of the tendency of absorbing knowledge in myself, just taking in information and news and analysis and it seems almost compulsive in me sometimes, and I do recognize it as a tendency for control over what seems to be an uncertain world or situation. And appreciate your reflection on not and being comfortable with not knowing the answer. The other thing I just want to mention just very briefly is I've been fascinated to have learned about a very well-known fundamentalist preacher who died fairly recently. His name was Carlton Pearson, and he was eventually outcast, I think, by the church, and that's partly because he, after years of preaching, he came to question the concept of hell. And it was fascinating that he, you know, his uncertainty in questioning about truths that were so strong in the fundamentalist church led to his expulsion. And so anyway, I'll just stop.
No, thanks, Kathy. Yeah, wow. Yeah, it's quite a courageous thing for him. Yeah. Anybody else before we close?
Yeah, this is a dew of water dropping on the ground named, sounds like clay. I would recommend Spaceman on Netflix if you have it. It's a beautiful, really cool story about loneliness, bringing people together. It's really transcendent, really cool story, and definitely right up any Buddhist's alley.
Thanks.
FYI.
Thanks, Clay. Yeah, appreciate that. Yeah. And Julie, were you going to share?
Yeah, I was just going to say one thing, that I have been attending my cousin's Bible study once. He does it once a month, and it's funny because he did kind of like a Q&A session as opposed to I'm going to speak from the Bible, and it was, you know, I liked that, so I could ask all these questions. My uncle was attending, and a couple others were attending, and they all said they really appreciated me being there because I thought of me being the beginner's mind there. So I was asking all these questions that I guess my uncle said it just added such a liveliness to the conversation. And I think I learned things and opened up to new ideas just because of that. So, I thought it was interesting to kind of piggyback on what, who first said something about that? I wanted to know the name of that priest that she was talking about. Or pastor.
Carlton Pearson was his name.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there's a movie called, I think it's called Sunday Morning or something on Netflix about his situation. Mm-hmm. And there's podcasts called Heretics about him. Yeah. So I wanted to look it up.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Well, folks, it's been wonderful to share this evening with you, and now it's time to let the inevitable impermanent nature of things run its course, and for us to bring our evening to a close. Sabbe Sankara Anicca, said the Buddha, all conditioned things are impermanent, so too our gathering this evening. So I'd like to invite us to close with just a reflection on kindness, loving kindness, friendliness, and to take this opportunity just to reflect on and water, cultivate those seeds in our hearts, those loving intentions. Specifically speaking from this evening, to maybe be tender and kind with ourselves when we don't know, and make room for that. And there's often a tendency to go into self-judgment. Yeah, so just experimenting with that, or maybe there's something else that's really alive for you this evening that could use a little TLC. Yeah, so just noticing what that is and make an offering there at the altar in your heart. And noticing what that is, what your heart might long to hear. Wishing yourself well. And as we do that, we can maybe find the universal in the personal, that when we go deep into our own hearts and minds, we recognize that we get close to the place where we all are one, where we touch our shared humanity, and then it becomes easy to wish others well. And yeah, so that's not a demand or expectation, it's just a natural evolution. So just noticing, yeah, there is a way to expand these wishes of well-being, maybe to our Sangha here this evening, extending our wishes of loving kindness and well-being, freedom from suffering. And then if it seems helpful and possible, extending those intentions out into the world, touching others' hearts, recognizing in some way there really aren't any others. There's just us. And wishing us well. May we all come to the Great Awakening, be free from fear, free from suffering in all forms. And you're welcome to join me in chanting the traditional chant, may all beings be happy. And we can do that three times. And then sadhu three times. And I'd like to invite you to unmute to join me in that chant. Totally optional, but if you'd like to, that'd be great.
May all beings be happy.
May all beings be happy. That's wonderful. Thank you. Beautiful.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Doug. Bye, everyone.
Wonderful group. Take good care. Have a good week, everybody.
Love you, Doug.
Love you, too. Take care. Bye.